Hi everyone, welcome back to the Pelvic Health Podcast. This is Laurie Forner here. We are going to talk today to Alex Lopes. She is the National Chair of the APA Women's, Men's, and Pelvic Health Group. So the APA is the Australian Physiotherapy Association. And she's the co-director of Pelvic Health Melbourne. Now, for those of you who aren't in Australia, I think this information will still actually be pretty interesting to see what our Physiotherapy Association is going to do. They're doing certain career frameworks and pathways for different subsections within physiotherapy, so sports, musculoskeletal. It's been an ongoing process for many years, and Alex wanted to talk to us about an update within the Women's, Men's, and Pelvic Health Group. Now, this includes the controversy surrounding whether or not we do competency assessments with respect to internal vaginal examinations. So, have a listen. Okay, well, I started recording. So, Alex, thank you for coming on to the podcast. So, we are going to talk today about, will you tell us what we're talking about? Because you were really excited to discuss some changes within our Physiotherapy Association here in Australia. So what is going on?
Thank you, Laurie, for the opportunity to chat to everyone, to your listeners. I love your podcast.
Thanks.
And I hope everyone else loves it too. I really wanted to come on mostly to just give everyone an update in Australia, particularly on where our career pathway is under our association. So we have 23,000 Australian members. And our membership group, our special interest group of women's, men's and pelvic health is the fourth largest group.
Woohoo.
Which actually puts us in a really strong position. So as far as in the National Advisory Committee, we're called the Big Four. So that means we have a representative voice on framework and where we're going and to advise the APA board. As do the other groups, but because we're representative of the larger component of our membership, we get proportionate larger voice, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So really what I wanted to talk to your listeners was about the career pathway. What I wanted to do is really explain to them how much work has gone in. I know everyone's been so patient. We've so wanted a women's, men's and pelvic health career pathway. We've been a bit stalled on the level one. The level two is coming. It is, we're ready to tender. So you may see an e-comms come out this week or next week, which is just going to be putting out interest for tendering for those who are prepared or interested in writing. Then the process is going to take a fair while. Probably the rollout of the actual level two won't be till February of next year. And the reason being, like anything, we've got that tender, then we've got the review, writing's 3 months. And then review of that is in another month. Then they've actually got to pilot it. Then we've got to get all the content online. So the process will take another 6 months, even though the underlying framework is done.
So this is February 2019.
This will be 2019. But for the good news is if you're still out there and doing your level ones, what we've developed is a bridging component. So presently the new level one is going to be 5 days. Our present level one is 2 days. The level one will include more pelvic health, so bladder bowel. It will include men's health in it as a foundation of men's health.
Is the level one still not including a vaginal exam?
That's right. So, but we do external palpation, not necessarily observation of each other, but observation of so that you know what to look for in a hospital-based scenario, particularly in terms of any vaginal dysfunction. An appearance in a postpartum situation. So there'll be observation content and palpation through clothes for the level one. There'll be lots on cueing, of course, of pelvic floor. There'll be the peripartum period for the woman as well, basic musculoskeletal components, and then definitely a men's health componentry with real-time ultrasound.
Okay.
And real-time ultrasound for women transabdominally. In the level one, which is
so is the men's transperineal or transabdominally?
Yeah, that's still in discussion. Presently, it's down as transperineal in the level one, which is quite quick going to that point. So that's still up for final discussion. At the moment, it is transperineal in the level one.
So why would you do transperineal men and not transperineal women in the level one?
Because the belief of the competence, the visual on the woman is much harder to see. and to assess than the man as far as a competency assessment.
Yeah.
Plus, to actually use biofeedback for the male and particularly to bias the anterior fibers, yeah, and basing it on the works that quite a few of our researchers have done, particularly Stuart Baptist in this field, we know, and Paul Hodges, that the transperineal has great good evidence and it tends to enable our physios to achieve a bit more because their palpatory assessments may not be externally, may not be as good feedback as the visual. Mm-hmm. Whereas for women, we can still do the levator ani through transabdominal. It's not ideal. Of course, we all know that. But for the men to be biasing those front fibers for continence, it's much better in transperineal. But there is those arguments, the why, okay, as far as competency go and knowledge goes.
Which we will get into.
Correct. And I also feel because you're not going to, and it was something about breaching the mucosal layer.
Yeah,
there is a whole level of competencies and skills that we need to give our new physios coming into this field on informed consent, on hygiene, before they broach that for a female, whereas the male, it's still on the external skin. So it has fewer issues.
Yep.
But it's still definitely open for debate, and I'm waiting for some final feedback. We have a group of men's health educators who've been assisting us in the pathway, and they're discussing and giving us their final feedback on where it should sit.
Okay.
Coming back to level one is 5 days. So we've got the 2 days presently that is not wasted. Okay, for those who've done it, that is part of your level two. But you will have a bridging 3 days. That bridging 3 days, of that 3 days, 1.5 days at least will be online content. There'll be 1 to 1.5 days of face-to-face content, and that will be abutted directly against the level two course. So you don't lose out time. Whilst we roll out all our level twos, the level one bridging will be there starting from February of next year, hopefully around every single state. It may take a while for training, but we're hoping next year level two will roll out through every state, not necessarily territory, but definitely every state.
So who's doing the bridging?
The bridging component, so the tender presently for this year is for the whole of level two, which is 11 days content, and the bridging content for the level one.
Yeah.
So this year we have funding to write the whole thing, and then next year, whilst the level two is rolling out, just those 2 days will be rewritten.
So the bridging, the kind of external bridging courses that we have between one and two, are they not available, or are they not, you know how we had like a different course in order to learn the VE before you do your level two that were external courses? Are we not going through that anymore?
No. So everything will be in the level two. The level one bridging will just be the componentry. So it'll be your men's health. It'll be the bladder and bowel that's not presently in it. A bit more advanced pelvic pain. So it's the content that's down as level one. We're just doing an infill.
Okay.
So that the idea being you, for rural members, you can come along and just do the face-to-face content and get the rest of your level one done and level two done all at once.
Yeah. And what happens for the people who have already done a whole bunch of other external courses? How are they jumping in? Has that changed?
Yeah, absolutely. So because we've never done eligibility exemption criteria for level two, because we've never had it.
Yeah.
So what once we get the tender process done and we've got our writers selected, then there's a group of us in this education subcommittee who are going to go together and collate all the content, all the courses around Australia and internationally, and find out what their content is and what eligibility you get for doing it. So that we can pretty much say if you've done so-and-so's course, it just means you need to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we will have that all worked out, and we plan to kind of have a day thrashing out those documents. We'll fly in and do it at an airport stop-off, to get that document done. I don't think that will be too difficult once we work out, because the content's designed of so many hours under bowel, so many under our bladder, because we've streamed the tender applications to content, which is very different in the past to what we've done. So we're hoping that the person who is a successful tenderers will tender for the whole of the level one and two, and they'll probably get the first right of refusal for the level three.
What do you mean right of refusal?
What that means is the right of refusal is that they get offered first. Would they like to continue on and write?
Yep.
If they don't, then it goes to a subsequent tender.
All right.
For example, if they've written the bladder content for one and two, because they know the flow of the content of what they've done and the style, we think it'd be most for operational consistency ideal to have the same writer.
Yep.
Provided they're able and the content is being received well.
Yep.
So just for efficiency's sake. We're going to have, we've got one, two, three, four, six streams under the one, two, one and two. And three is going to be completely different again. So three we originally had as eight masterclasses, 8 days. That's changed again. There's going to be at least, most of those classes will be 2 or 3 days in length.
Yep.
So pelvic pain will be 2 or 3 days.
All right. What are the six streams?
So the six streams, one is men's health, one is women's health, one is anatomy, functional anatomy and miscellaneous,
yep.
Where all the odd bods go. Then there's bladder, bowel, pelvic pain, sexual pain.
Okay.
So those middle ones are all under pelvic health, and then there's a women's health stream. Women's health's quite big. And men's health also, because they're on their own streams.
Okay.
We're ideally wanting one tenderer, one writer to follow through on the streams, but the men's health are already indicated that there might be what we call a syndicate, a group of writers who will break that content up based on their expertise.
Yep. Okay, so then what happens if people – so let's maybe get into competency now. So what is – what, when we talk about competency, what are we talking about? What are we talking about, and why are we doing this?
Yeah, great. Yeah, good question in this way. We've had so many discussions about, you know, whose role is it to assess competency, and can we as an organisation assess competency? So the universities have an ability under their, or their auspice is to assess. So they will actually have to be able to assess and certify. So you get a certificate at the end of your course or a master's or whatever you do. At the APA, we only have the ability to give you a certificate of attendance. What this competency now will be, as peers, we can peer review competency, but we're not stating that we are giving you a certification of anything. We're just saying that on this day you have been peer reviewed. And we are making a national statement at the end of all of this, once this framework is rolled out, that it's our recommendation to perform an intimate exam from a physiotherapist around Australia that they be required to have done X, Y, and Z. And the X, Y, and Z will sit under all these learning objectives and competency assessments,
so
which sit within the level one and two.
So who is doing? Who will be doing the competency testing?
So then that's a whole nother framework. So we have to find out from the APA what is the process, what are the other groups presently doing. So the sports is probably the framework, sports group is probably the framework that we've used and paralleled ourselves across the most. What we will be at each coursework, you will have assessors. They will have to be attend a national training. So there's consistency of assessment. And the assessment criteria, I do not want to make anyone fearful, is basic competency. Are you hygienic? Are you safe? Are you palpating A, B, and C? It's as simple as that.
How do you know if they're palpating it? Are you having any of the competency testers being a subject or?
Yeah, well, that's again another step. Sorry, are we palpating? They are aiming to palpate different things. Can we truly assess that? I don't know. What will happen is the tenderers are up writing the competency assessments. So they will have to put in their requirements, and that has to go up to the college to approve. So we have an APA college, which is with educators, and they approve, say, they are reasonable standards based on a comparison with the medical profession, nursing profession. So they look at the other paradigms to see. So it's multi-stages, and that's what I've discovered in all this journey. There is multiple stages of consultation through the process. So competency will be basic. The competency we haven't divulged, we haven't sourced out. What we have said is it will be fairly basic. Yeah. It's really about consumer safety, physio safety. At the end of level two, you are only assessed as being, we talk about competency in terms of novice, under the frameworks. Do you remember your competency framework assessments? Where are we? I've got them here. Sorry, guys, I'm just looking through some of my notes. We talk about novice, then I think it's intermediate, which just means the ability to apply basic knowledge. Then it's, before that it's framework, novice, intermediate, advanced. So our aim is to really get, the novice is the level one. Yeah, just getting your knowledge based. You may be able to apply it, you may not. Level two is going from the framework to novice application to intermediate, meaning you can do it, but can you truly clinical reason? Maybe not, because we think back to ourselves when we've done our basic training and then you go out to assess a patient, even when if you think of yourself as an undergraduate, your first 3 months as physios, we all kind of went, oh, my goodness, you know, I've got this kit, but I don't actually know what I'm doing or I don't know much of what I'm feeling. So we expect at the end of this level two that our physios will have an intermediate competency, meaning that they can go out and do a certain amount, but they're ideally still to be supervised by an advanced competency clinician.
Weird feedback. Once they're finished their level two, then they're still technically should have some supervisor.
No, we can't dictate this. This is the whole thing about, you know, that we've ticked them off to be competent. As part of this assessment, there will be some supervision time. So it'll be required that you observe. So as part of your competency training, but that is believed to be adequate after lots of consultation by doing your theory and framework, by having an in-house competency assessment of safety, and then doing a number of mentoring hours, and that's considered adequate. Our recommendations and what we're spending a lot of time on in this framework is to give all physios who've completed their level two a feeling of comfort of what they can assess and what is outside their present competency.
Mm-hmm. And before they get into the level three.
Absolutely, to know, right, I can assess this patient and know, is it on, off, has their resting tone? I might be able to identify if there's some increased tone or overactivity or there's lots of discussions on those, the wording now.
Yeah.
What is the myalgic?
Tension, myalgia.
Myalgia, whatever word you want to use for that. So what we want to give our physios is an ability to know, I'm comfortable with this. I can do this. Anything outside of this, I know I can refer on.
Okay. And so what does then this mean for, say, somebody like me? So if I go through the exclusion criteria, that's generally for just level one and level two.
Yep.
Is there exclusion criteria for level three, or how does that work? Like the framework sounds great for people who are entering it, but I know there are a lot of us, and I think that's where a lot of the anxiety is coming from too, are that there's a lot of people who have been doing this for, you know, 20 years or.
Absolutely.
So how do we fit into this?
Absolutely. And that's the question that has come up, obviously, on Facebook and I'm getting a lot through National. And we've thought this through a lot. We don't want to make this process arduous, but we are drawing a line in the sand. We are saying that you may have some gaps in your learning. So
everyone has gaps in their learning.
Absolutely. So we are saying that the, and we're going to have it absolutely nutted out, how many hours of framework knowledge you need to demonstrate that you've done.
What do you mean? How do you demonstrate a certain number of hours?
We are just going to state you need to have done, if you've done the university courses, you're automatically being peer assessed. So you passed level two. Yep, so that's clear. If you've done your master's, you're already past that level. It's for those who've done coursework or learnt on the job, which is there's many of us who've had that journey pathway. What will be required to do is it'll be made a statement. There is so many hours of men's work, men's health, so many hours of women's health, so many hours of ours. You just need to probably write a stat deck because we can't possibly assess 10,000 and actually go and credential or double check. You'll be asked to just provide, these are the hours, certify that you've done that training, which is just a signature. Then we get you to do an online theory exam covering all that material, very simple, just all the theory that's in level one and two. There'll be quick quizzes at the end and you'll have to complete that quiz and you will have to go in and do a competency assessment.
Do you need to pay for the quiz or the competency?
Yes.
But people who have done a university degree are automatically cleared of that, even though they may be politely lacking in a lot of the experience and knowledge, but they don't need to do it, whereas we will still need to do it and pay for it. So what if we decide not to? We'll get to that.
Yeah, and that's okay. But I want to come back to these guys have paid up to $32,000 to do their courses.
Yeah.
So we are trying to, and that's about me negotiating very heavily with the APA.
Yeah.
And I've had a few fantastic people come to me and offering their time to assist so that we can make it incredibly affordable. My aim is to make it around the $200 mark where we've got to fund the processing of it, because you've got to get a certificate, you know, at the end of it, it's got to be processed. I'm hoping it'll be online quiz, short answer or multi-choice, and then there will be a 2 to 3 years of competency assessments where you'll have to go, potentially have to go in and do a very quick 10, 15-minute peer assessment, tick off.
Yeah, but what is the peer assessment involved? Like, I find it really difficult for somebody to tell me if I'm doing things right when they don't. It's a cave. You can't really see what I'm doing.
And I agree, and I love we're having this discussion because we have to draw a line in the sand, Laurie.
I know.
The thing is, everyone is going to go, this is ridiculous, I have to do it. And we agree, but we have to make it, we have to say, this is our line that you have to do the basics, because everyone going forward is going to have to do that.
Yeah.
The alternative is we say, no, everyone who's done their courses, you're right to go. We're not going to assess you at all. So which way do we go? What would you recommend? Someone might have done a 2-day course and then is out there treating on their own. Do we have any obligation to draw a line in the sand and make sure that they can answer these questions, know what their safety parameters are and their scope of practice is and when to refer on? That's kind of what it comes back to for me, is protecting our physios. We've had cases and amazing things that have just rocked my mind where I keep going back to, I want to protect our members. You know, protect our members. You know, if you cause harm in some way, you're devastated as an individual. You know, and we want to protect our members from, one, not causing harm or thinking they're causing harm, and to be knowing that they're doing a terrific job by giving them the foundations to be able for competency and a framework. So it's a really difficult one. What would you suggest, Lauren?
Oh, God, I don't know. That's why then my question then comes back to, so what if we decide not to? What happens to us?
Absolutely nothing. And the reality is, and I say this to all of you listening, there is no jurisdiction whatsoever requiring that you go and get a competency assessment from someone who's potentially less experienced than you in some cases. So Where I come back, it's about law, okay, and common law and rulings on law. So presently, because we've had no framework, international framework of education, if a claim came against you of malpractice, you would have to go to common law. The courts go to, well, what does your professional body state that you should have done? And if we don't have a national statement about process, informed consent, all these things that we're trying to rush and get together for everyone now, if we don't have a framework about what is the national standard of education, it goes back to what do your peers think is adequate education? And if you are covered that you think most of your peers would be very comfortable with your education, you're covered. That's it.
But is this peers within the APA or because there's going to
members of the physio profession. So they will get recognised members who often go to court, who are familiar with the court process, and these members, and they'd say, is this reasonable practice? Is this reasonable amount of education? Is what the person's done reasonable practice? Yeah. So if you know you're covered, there is no need to go down this pathway whatsoever. So when we put a national statement out that you should have done, and I'm making these figures up because I haven't got the final figures, 150 hours of coursework, 20 hours of mentoring, clinical reviewed assessment prior to performing an intimate exam. That's what the national statement will say. If you haven't done that, are you at risk? Maybe, maybe not. I think if you can actually say, well, no, I haven't done that pathway because it wasn't one in existence, and two, I've done due diligence by all my PD, which you can demonstrate ongoing, then you're okay.
So people can, if they choose not, because again, if there's women who have been in this field for 25 years and they're close to retirement.
Absolutely.
Should they be going through this pathway?
Not through the pathway. That's what
no,
we
but,
wanted
well,
to have.
Through
we
the competency exam.
The competency assessment. And as I said, the competency exam, I really wanted to make it clear it is an online, and I hope it'll be a half an hour quick quiz. You do.
Yeah.
And then when you go to a course or a national conference, you go into a room and there'd be a tick-off procedure you do. We want to make it as simple and non-threatening.
Who are in the rural areas who can't easily just fly to go do this face-to-face competency assessment.
They will be at just about every course, we're hoping, that we will have someone in the room, and it might be.
But these are APA courses you're talking about.
Yes, but I've had quite a few members saying they're happy to go to rural areas and or who are in rural areas to offer that service to their rural members.
Yeah.
I've had quite a few who've heard of this and said, I offer my time, but I want them to be paid. So I've got to negotiate with the APA about a payment scheme so all assessors get paid as well for their time because you're putting that money in. So, look, that is a detail still to be worked out.
Yeah. And so
this is where we sit at the moment. It's not a clear cut, but this is where after 3 years of discussion, we're saying this is the competency assessment we believe going forwards are required for our new graduates, and they're required to be a grandfathering of our physios if they want to continue doing intimate examinations.
And do you need to have this so you do this competency assessment after level two?
Mm-hmm. No, in level two.
Oh, in level two.
It's part of the level two. You're done.
So you can't do level three unless you've done that.
That's the eligibility we'll have to go through. Theoretically, it depends on the level threes. If the level threes have intimate exams within them, then you'll get your competency done then.
All right. So you may just be able, if you are excluded from level one and two, you could go into level three, do competency exams within that.
Within it. So you'd have someone there who's, right, you're doing a pelvic pain, you might be doing some trigger points, you might be doing some wand, you might be doing down training, and you're doing your intimate examinations within the course, and you might have an examiner there, and they say, tick, 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 you're fine.
And we're not going to talk about trigger points in level three?
depends on research. I'm not writing content.
I hope that term has changed.
Sorry. Point work, releasing, down training. Myalgic tension.
So, wow, yeah. So that's yes, it's a lot to take in. It's
And that's why
interesting.
I really am so thankful to have this time to discuss with you, because I know everyone's out there going the same thing. Oh, well, and there is, exactly as you said to me, there's that, why do I have to do it? And the answer is, you absolutely don't have to. And I really want people to relax a little bit in the system, let the pathway come out. We'll see these new graduates, and we'll see all the newer physios coming into pelvic health, and or some really experienced muscles and or other physios coming across to do it, and we'll see them come through, and we'll understand the pathway, and it's going to evolve.
Yeah. And sorry, coming right just back to like the competency assessment again as well, other than the written side of things, if you were doing sort of a practical assessment, is it objective or subjective? Like
It's purely objective.
but how is it objective? How is
Sorry, we're only looking at the actual process of gloving, hygiene, safety.
All right.
Because it's about risk minimization.
Yeah. But doctors don't have to do this.
I agree. I agree. We are drawing a line in the sand and saying, and that's why I'm saying to you, a lot of the medical profession is interested. I've had a lot of interest because we're actually putting, for the first time, a competency statement out, which is based on a peer review assessment. As you say, doctors don't do it, nurses don't do it. So, well, I asked 3 years ago, and my understanding was then they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Osteos get taught in an undergraduate program about intimate examinations. They don't do it on each other, and theoretically, they can go out and do it.
I didn't even know osteos did internal stuff.
Can do. A lot of them don't because they don't feel competent, so they
Yes.
don't, but they are taught it in their undergraduate program. So in researching all this, I had to find out what are the processes in all the other allied health fields.
Yeah.
No one has got the rigor that we're putting in. Does that mean we don't do it?
No, but does this protect our profession?
I can't answer that.
As
I would
in,
think it gives us incredible clout within our profession and is setting up a framework for us to be world leaders.
is this also like, which we kind of had touched on just before we started recording, but is this somehow protecting our what we do as physios working in this field from other allied health professions starting to do or trying to do what we're already doing?
I love that question, Laurie, because I think, in this scape, the biggest that's been fascinating and the biggest risk, and I apologise if you do have any EPs on your listening, but
We
that has
do.
come up. Yeah, and that has come up. That, and I know I myself have had an EP contact me and say, well, I want to do intimate examinations to assess. And that raises massive concerns for me because you can hear in this conversation the rigor behind what we're trying to achieve. So I do believe it will assist us in creating a framework of safety for the consumer and for the physiotherapy profession, which, as I said, I believe the other professions will follow. I believe that in itself will mean that the other professions, like EP, if they want to do it, are going to have to follow the same rigor.
Yeah, so it's not just us as the profession of being territorial because we have this special thing that we can do. We're really just.
Definitely not. And I don't want that. And I know you're of the same mindset. We're all about sharing knowledge, working within our scope, for the betterment of all Australians,
But doesn't that
and
mean
their
then
health.
any allied health profession can just create their own competency without even having the depth of knowledge in that area? They can just, because you said it's not registered with any kind of real governing body.
Well, no, it is because we're a physio first.
Yeah.
You have to have, and that gives you your insurance. That gives your ability to be able to assess,
Yeah.
diagnose, and that's the key difference, assessment, diagnosis, and treatment. And that is our scope of practice.
Yeah.
And that is a point of difference in a lot of cases to other professions.
Okay.
So we have that, and that we are protected under APRA. We are protected under the Australian board. So APRA protects the consumer. And then our board is about creating governance and scope and defining, assisting to define scope in an ever-changing world of scope evolving.
Yeah. Does this framework deter people from doing extra courses outside of the APA?
We're hopeful not. The idea for me is the APA, for us to do this, the funding to set up this course is huge. And as far as level three goes, we just need people out there starting to develop content. The APA is where they can't develop at all, and they are so keen to start with partnerships with people who've got content and or link in that others provide the education content, and the APA says this is part of our pathway. So the sports presently, as you're aware, has multiple courses that fit into their pathway. Mm. You choose of so many in upper limb, lower limb, and we're hoping to have similarly. And the framework has been developed that we can do that.
That would be hard, though, if you had your own content. That would be hard to just give it over to someone else.
You don't have to. This is the thing. There's so many arrangements that they've done. The level one and two will be the APA intellectual property.
Yeah.
Beyond that, the property can remain within the persons, and that the partnership is about we share a bit of the advertising, and there's a share a bit of a there'll be royalties or remuneration. But the APA likes the idea of the partnerships being in charge of the intellectual property because they update it all the time.
Yeah.
The cost and the, as I can absolutely warrant, the pain in the process of getting massive collaboration to evolve a pathway versus one individual constantly updating it is much easier to do the individual partnerships. So they think the best model is a mix. The basic one and two is great to be owned by the APA because really it's foundation. It's foundation. It is just to the basics. And then beyond that, we have our advanced practice. Yep. And that's great to have advanced practitioners developing that, which I'm trying to support for people to do that. I want people to develop bowel courses, peds courses, pain courses. Develop it now. Great opportunity. Get out there and develop, and the APA will partner with you.
Who's reviewing the courses so that we know, especially like external ones, but if you want, if you're getting people to create these things, who decides that they're worthy?
Yep, and that's been a big step as well. So that has had to be another process. So there's been an election. There's been names put forward. The APA has some guidance structure. We need an educator. We need someone from the public, someone from the private system, and someone from national who knows the process and has seen the process go forwards. They're the foundation of what they need, and they are. We're presently in a closed voting system on that at the moment, and then those people need to be asked whether they will be happy to select. They can't tender if they're on the selection panel.
How big's the selection
panel? And then
panel?
There's only four.
Okay.
Our preference is also to have, and we're looking at having someone from the educators group who's been along for the whole journey on that panel because they understand the product in its entirety and what the aim of the product is.
Yeah.
So the processes have been significant. Our difficulty has been we also need reviewers of content, and our pool is not huge.
I feel our pool is massive.
Our pool is massive of the intermediate level.
Yeah.
Probably the advanced and expert, we don't have as big a pool as Sports and Musk, just because we're relatively new at the ground level. But I agree with you, our pool, we have a groundswell, and that's what I'm excited about. This groundswell is ready.
Yeah.
It's ready to be educated. They want more. What I'm really excited about for this product, Laurie, is if I'm doing sports, I can come in and pick and choose and say, right, I'm really interested in learning about pregnancy and musculoskeletal management, or I'd really like to do a men's health subject. And same for us, you can go across to any of the other courses and do content.
Yeah.
We've got the pain group are going to do foundation pain work for level one and two. Brilliant. So if we're consolidating amongst the other special interest groups, and they'll do a lot of the online content for pain, explained pain, this sort of stuff. So I think there's a lot of collaboration been happening to try and get the pathways parallel, and so that if you do go down the pathway of titling, there's support, there's a pathway, there's a process. They've also introduced, which I think is brilliant, because we get too many people not passing the titling exam across all streams. This is consistent. So what they're doing is they're putting a subject done before the titling exams to assist you on preparing you to get through it and what you need to do.
Which
So
they
I th and it's,
should.
which they should, which is great. And of course, we've got a research component in there for those who want to go on to research.
All
It's been a
right. So
big
when is this all, other than the level two being ready February 2019, when does kind of the rest of this roll out?
Right. So for me, one and two are going to come pretty close. So we've got the bridging for two coming out early 19. I expect by mid 19, the one will be done because it's only 2 days. And the same writers who've already tendered, they just go straight away and write it. So that, and then putting the packages together will be all next year. Once we've got that done, it's the discussions about level three. And I'm starting to speak to groups and encouraging them to start developing content. We have learning objectives. I just need to get approval from the APA to start those communications of discussions because I know there's a lot of people out there who want this content now. For me, I think we can easily, there is a lot of, there's a few educators out there who are already providing advanced content and I'd like to bring those in. Sorry, have exemptions for that content that it is relevant in the pathway. The other thing that I'm doing is I'm meeting with MedBridge. I don't know if you know MedBridge. It's an online provider in the US. So Herman and Wallace Institute have a lot of online content. I'm looking at what the costing would be for us to give them our learning objectives for the online content and them gutting their products and creating an Australian product for us without having to write any of our products for level one and two. So that the writing for level one and two could just be the face-to-face component in the lectures. So tender's still happening, but we're just looking at partnerships. So I had the opportunity of going to an Ignition workshop where we had 20 physios from around Australia and we had some leading digital health providers, service providers and platform providers. So we had a big discussion about where to from here. And I think at the end of that discussion, the APA was influence to direct their focus towards partnerships with software providers rather than developing our own software platform.
Yep, which makes sense.
Makes sense. Because these software providers are doing fantastic stuff. Not that we may go on it, the APA is just interested in costings and what product we can use.
Sounds so businessy.
Yes, and we have international tenderers. So we have not only Australians, but we have internationals interested in tendering for our product.
And that's good for the APA.
It's good for Australians because in the end, we hope the product will be an international standard product. So we want the best tenderers from the world coming in to write the content. And we want this content to be dynamic, applicable. That's why we have someone from the private, their auspice is to look at can these graduates, the people who've done this coursework, walk out and treat in a private practice? From the public, can they come into a level two position and have competency to work in? From the educator, is this content up to date and academic and researched? From national, can this product be rolled out operationally? So that's the auspice of each of that selection panel is to look at the tenders under those labels, if you like, to see can it all occur.
Within all of that, just going back to specific information within the levels, because now I know that pessary use has increased within women's health physio. So is pessaries coming into that? Because I know it's a uni course.
Yep. Not in level two. Absolutely not. So I've already spoken to the developers of the uni course. My understanding is at least four pessary clinics around Australia. What we're going to do once we've got the tender process done, I've got another subcommittee contacting all these pessary clinics around Australia. We're going to try and get a national pessary protocol about standards. And then the pessary training, we will, of course, consult with the university degree because they put a fair bit of work into that coursework, and we'll consult with all the pessary units around Australia, maybe internationally, to find out what the best product is. I am imagining, but I'm not laying my hat on it, the pessary workshop or level three course will be at least 3 days, if not five.
All right. So there will be something within the APA.
Completely. Okay. And it'll just be pessaries. Pessary fittings with competencies.
Yep.
How many days? I don't know. Same with pain. Pain could be 3 days, could be 5 days. Peds, how long should they be to get you to that expert level?
Yeah. So we're looking at a few years.
Absolutely. Before we have the total product done, that's why I'm really encouraging for anyone who's listening, who is an expert clinician, and there is loads of you out there who have awesome experience. I encourage you to start thinking about writing content and start doing coursework. You can do it under the APA auspice because we have no product out there under advanced BAL.
So if they're writing content for level three, does that then make them exempt from having to do anything else?
good questions. Look, these are the ones, and I know as far as that tick off, isn't it crazy? Because they'll probably end up being the assessors.
I know.
But there is this, I know, and everyone's going to laugh and say, but I come back and ask all of you who are there going, this is ridiculous. What would you have your national body do? How do we protect you and the consumer going forward? Do you want us to say it's only for the next generation and everyone who's done a weekend course up to a master's or a PhD is the same? You can call yourself the same. There's no jurisdictional standard. There's no line in the sand. Or do you want us to put a competency framework that is nationally consistent together? And in the end, that's what we've stood behind.
Yeah.
And I understand completely. You know, this, gosh, you know, I'm so experienced. Why do I need to go back to that? And, you know, maybe we'll have more credential criteria that will enable those who are very experienced not to have to do that competency ticker. It's going to come down to a bit of time, a bit of trial and error, seeing what's happening. I want to make it so the pathway is easy. And so I really want I'd love as much support as we can for this pathway because I think it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be visionary for the future. And I think I'm going to push that every single physio does it.
So
I want every physio to have pelvic health training.
If women are going to do the competency exam and not have done the level one and two, whenabouts will that roll out, do you think? When do people need to think about it?
Doing the competencies, it will be at least halfway through next year because we have to iron out all these questions you're asking. I want to be able to have clear answers for everyone.
Yeah.
Presently, honestly, we're working really hard on tender and getting those questions nutted out, getting the framework. You know, the colour coding on these documents alone has been nuts with six streams and bridging and, you know, the documents are 150 pages each.
Yeah.
So it's been an extensive amount of work to try and get this to this point. I think it'll be next year, Laurie, to before that sort of thing starts and you'll have at least a three-year process, so I would hire, and we will not be making a national statement until we've given you that time.
All right.
So no national statement will come out for probably 3 or 4 years. So people have got heaps of time. And by then, we probably will fine-tune it so much you can do it in 5 minutes.
Yep.
You know, who knows? So I would advise people to sit and wait.
And
those who are very experienced
to
sit and wait.
You can update us through the podcast.
I can update you through the podcast. I'll be updating you through e-news.
Yeah.
My tenure finished at the end of this year. I'm just still deciding whether I'll continue on to see the framework completed. Kath Willis, my vice, is doing a fantastic job. She's with me on a lot of these committees. So I may do one more term just to try and see this through.
All right. Well, anything else you want to tell anyone?
The biggest thing is I thank your listeners for their support and for their patience. I know this pathway has taken a long time to get here, but I do hope and I am working incredibly hard to make this framework an exciting vision for the future. But I hope you guys are excited and do remember that the product's not going to be perfect, but it will evolve.
If they have questions, they can contact you.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's alopez@pelvichealth.melbourne. Contact away. I'm not going to do the Facebook again. I'm going to send out a post, but I was just active for a whole weekend with all those questions last time. So I can send stuff out, definitely an intermittent post, but I'm more than happy to have some questions. If I'm getting consistent questions, I'll probably send it out by the Facebook. Or can we do attachments under the podcast?
Yep, I can put attachments in the show notes. And again, if you get a whole bunch of questions, like I remember looking at that going, whoa, yeah, there's lots of questions. If you get a whole bunch again, if it's easier and you want to do this to address some of those questions, even a 15-minute podcast, we can just do something.
And
look, like
what
that.
We may do, the APA has got virtual classrooms coming out now, which are now enables people to have questions live. So I think once we get the tender and once we've got some more questions, I think these opportunities, you allowing me this opportunity, plus having a discussion on Facebook, if we can have this year another four events where people hear at the same time, and it just kept getting reiterated that it's not, you are going to be consulted. You know, our this is all about servicing the members. And I can guarantee you the APA Executive Committee is awesome. I have been incredibly impressed. I work in business, I work in management, and I am impressed with our APA presently and their vision and consultation. They are thinking about the future and it's an exciting place.
Cool. Well, thank you so much.
No problems. Thank you for the opportunity.